Hello and welcome to episode 11 of the Heritage Langham podcast. I'm Heather Payton. This month we're introducing some entirely new characters into our panoply of Flemings. It also might require you to revise your history and geography of Scotland. So we'll be hearing from a man who's traced his family back to 1066.
Frescan was the son of Olek, and Olek would have been either himself at Hastings, or probably more likely his father would have been at Hastings.
And a researcher who's poured cold water on a lovingly held theory that two of our Flemings played an important role north of the border.
In terms of chronology, they could not have been the same people as the Pembrokeshire, Wiseau and Tancred.
Oh well, more from them later. Now, we know that Pembrokeshire wasn't the only part of the British Isles to become home to Flemish incomers, and the more you look into it, the more you find out how wide their influence was. In Scotland, St Andrews University has been hosting a research programme with similarities to our own. It's the brainchild of one man, a former World Bank economist, Alex Fleming, who spends much of his year in Washington. His interest was first sparked as a young lad back in the 1960s, when an elderly aunt told him the family was descended from Flemish immigrants. A busy career meant he couldn't do much about it, but as he approached retirement, he decided the books he'd accumulated just didn't do the subject justice, so he'd write something based on current knowledge himself. But then he changed his mind.
When it came to the point of retirement, I thought to myself, well, I don't really want to just rehash what's been written. I'd really like to try and make some progress, maybe dig into some new areas. I'm not a historian myself. I'm an economist by training. So I thought, well, why don't I see if I can mobilise some other support, mobilise some people who might be interested. And my first thought was to go to St Andrews University, where I had quite strong linkages. And as I retired, we also bought a little apartment, a flat, just down the road from St Andrews. So St Andrews was an obvious point for me to focus it. So I went to the Department of History at St Andrews, and they were very interested in themes of the relationship between Scotland and other countries. So they were quite keen to do work on it as well. So that's how it started, say about 4 years ago now, when we first began to develop the project. We engaged a couple of young PhD students to work on different aspects. I think one of the important things was we decided to set up this blog. And the blog turned out to be an excellent way of engaging people. And it just mushroomed from there.
I'll ask you in a moment what you actually found, but first tell me a bit about the background. Now, how did the Flemings become established in Scotland? We know how they came to Wales because they were sent here to tame the unruly Welsh.
There has been a long, long relationship between Scotland and Flanders. Probably fishermen who came up from Flanders, fished in the seas off Scotland. There was trade developed between the countries. On and off, and there would have been interflows of people and so on. Superimposed on that, there was probably about three phases. One was the phase where King David I, when he ascended the throne, wanted to bring in the Flemish. He'd met lots of Flemish people when he was in England. He managed to persuade some of them to come up to Scotland. I would call them more the elite Flemish. They were given land in various places. A second phase was, although this was not a very precise phase, it was over a period of many years, groups of migrants, economic migrants, who left Flanders for various reasons and often had skills such as weaving, which they brought to Scotland. So in the 16th century, for instance, the Scots were very, very keen to have the Flemish there. In fact, they had some legislation which they passed which encouraged them to come and provided incentives for them to come. And then you had another period in the 16th, 17th century when there was possibly religious migrants who were fleeing from persecution in Flanders.
Was there a point at which they were actually invited to subdue the locals, much like they were here in Wales?
Well, that was, I think, the elite Flemings. There was some an element of rebelliousness in the Scottish population, and I think particularly the group that went up to the Moray Firth, they certainly had a role in subduing that area.
So is it possible to sum up what the project has found so far, the conclusions, the main conclusions?
I think the feeling we have is that probably the Flemish people, their influence has been a bit understated in the traditional histories. And I think it's partly because the migration, if you like, taking place over such a long period of time, 600 years effectively, in these different phases, that probably there's been a bit of dilution of their impact. But probably when you pull it all together, certainly more of an impact than you would get from reading Scottish history books. We hardly ever mention the Flemish, actually.
No, I was wondering, and this is slightly off the subject, if Scotland's experience of inward migration by the Flemings, and of course by many other groups over the years, has made it more receptive to present-day immigration, in which, of course, Scotland has figured in quite an interesting way.
Yeah, that's a good point. I did wonder that myself, actually. I think the point of fact is that Scotland has always had a much stronger relationship with the continent than England has. A friendly relationship. You know, there's been the Scottish-French relationship. But then there's also been the Scottish-Flanders one. So, yes, I think in general the Scots are a little bit more open-minded to relationships with the continent. And the fact that they've had Flemish immigrants as well as French Huguenot immigrants, incidentally, as well, could be one reason why that is the case.
Alex Fleming of the Scotland and the Flemish People Project talking to me from Washington. Interesting to note that their research has, like ours, included a DNA project. They're still evaluating the results, but one thing it has shown is that men with the surname Fleming do not necessarily share the same bloodline, which maybe has implications for our roaches. Interesting also to note that it was the Scots themselves who imported the Flemings rather than having them imposed by an English king. But there's been much deliberation over where they came from and the routes they took. Here it's been almost an article of faith that two of the Flemings who left their mark in Wales, Tancred, who built Haverford West Castle, and Wiso or Wiso, who gave his name to Wisson, went off to Scotland to set up Flemish communities as so-called locators. But did they? Charles Rigg is a former history teacher who thinks not.
No. I think if we start looking at the timings, I think that's the crucial thing. In the case of the Pembrokeshire Flemings, we know that Wiso, described as the leader of the Flemings, arrived about the year 1112. We also know that he was dead by about 1130. So, and similarly, Tancred at Haverford West was dead by that time too. Now, the timing of the arrival of the Flemish incomers to Upper Clydesdale in Scotland is much later. The first mention of the Clydesdale Wiso is during the 1150s, and Tancred quite a bit later. So in terms of chronology, they could not have been the same people as the Pembrokeshire Wiso and Tancred. It's also important to remember that Wiso and Tancred were not uncommon names for the time. And the fact that the Pembroke Wiso and Tancred were known Flemings has helped Scottish historians validate the Flemish character of Upper Clydesdale. But there's never been a suggestion from historians that they're the same people.
Well, you've looked at the routes taken by Flemings to Scotland. Where do you think they actually came from? Was it from other parts of Britain or indeed from Flanders?
The current thinking would appear to me to be that the Flemish settlement of Upper Clydesdale in the 1150s, 1160s was a second and permanent stage in a Flemish migration which possibly began in Yorkshire. And, you know, we know there was a significant Flemish settlement in that part of England post-conquest period. And we also know that after Henry II became king in 1154, the Flemings in England were to be expelled. So there would be a pool of Flemings who, if invited to Scotland, would probably have welcomed, you know, coming at that time. There's also another connection in Cleveland in particular. The Lord of Cleveland was Robert the Bruce, who was given lands in Annandale by David I. And when Bruce took Annandale, he brought with him knights from Cleveland, not from Normandy. And we think that a similar pattern happened in Upper Clydesdale. The person who we think was the locator was not Wiso or Tancred, but was a person called Baldwin.
Charles Rigg, now researching the Scottish Flemings at the Bigger and Upper Clydesdale Museum in the Scottish Borders. Perhaps the next research programme should be the mystery over how Wiso or Wiso pronounced his name. So it looks as though the Flemings who went to that part of Scotland may have gone via Yorkshire and Cleveland, and that the dates for Wiso and Tancred from Pembrokeshire simply don't add up. Another theory bites the dust. But we know of at least one Fleming who did go to Scotland after spending at least some time in Pembrokeshire. Mark Sutherland Fisher is a beneficiary of DNA testing, and he's traced his Flemish ancestry back to a chap called Freskin, who appears in the same document that identifies Godebert, father figure of our Flemings.
What we understand is that Freskin was the son of Olek, and Olek would have been either himself at Hastings, or probably more likely his father would have been at Hastings.
Gosh.
There were, as I understand it, basically two groups of Flemish who settled in Wales. The first group one could describe as Norman noblemen and connections who were given land as a reward for their service to William the Conqueror. They were effectively like a police force. And in return for suppressing any rebellion, they were basically told, take as much as you like, build your castles, as long as you do it in my name. There was a second group then. You could describe them as merchants and artisans who came in at a later date, probably brought in by the Flemish nobles, and they brought in sheep. As to why Freskin almost certainly belonged to the former category, we know that by 1130, Freskin had territorial interests in Scotland. In 1130, he was asked by David I basically to go up to the Murray Firth, where I am, and suppress the locals. Effectively, exactly what his father and the others would have done in Wales a generation earlier, because this part of Scotland owed its allegiance more to Norway than to Scotland. So there was a very large battle fought near Elgin in 1130, in which Freskin and one or two other Flemish nobles were successful, in return for which David I gave them as much land as they wanted. Believe it or not, there remains in existence title deeds which King William the Lion of Scotland granted in the late 1100s to Freskin's grandsons. And they refer to Freskin serving King David I of Scotland.
What do you know about him in Wales and what he did?
Well, interestingly, the pipe roll entry from 1130 indicates that he was being paid a fine. He was being charged a fine for not paying proper taxes to the Exchequer. So I rather think it suited him to go to Scotland because he'd got into a spot of bother with Henry I of England. Now, his father, Olek, we think we've identified him described as a sergeant of the crown in a land court fight over in Cambridgeshire, where Olek appears to have seized land which was supposed to have belonged to the church, and the church objected, and there was then a dispute over it. We now know through DNA that the Douglases, some of the Murrays, and Frescan's direct descendants all belong to the same family.
Have you had your DNA done?
Yes, but I'm not a Sutherland in the male line. My father's family is English, but my uncle, my mother's side, has and is a direct descendant of Frescan.
Gosh. You've got a huge amount of information and you've done an enormous amount of research. How do you feel about having this chap as your ancestor? Do you feel proud of him or what do you think?
Well, I'm incredibly proud of him.
Mark Sutherland Fisher rejoicing in his Flemish ancestor and remarkably able to identify a family member who was actually at the Battle of Hastings. That's it for now. Next month, the last of our podcasts, I'm afraid, we'll be looking back at what Heritage Langham has achieved and our plans for the future, plus the difficulties surrounding translating our Tapestry app into Welsh. As always, thanks to the Heritage Lottery Fund for making our project possible, and to you for listening.